Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Weekly Awakening podcast. I hope everyone is doing well and enjoyed this past Monday's episode. So it is the fall equinox, and as you know, that means we are headed towards the darkest time of the year, which up here in the Northeast, pretty much everywhere north of, you know, the north part of the country, it gets very, very dark and cold. And oftentimes that is when we're shown our darkness, we're shown the sides of us that we don't necessarily like. We're, you know, different things, we get lonely, we get tired, our mental illness kind of creeps in. And I thought, you know what, I really need to do an episode, just uniting all of us when it comes to mental illness, you know, uniting all of us and showing that you are not alone, whatever you're gonna go through, whatever you're nervous to go through as we enter into the dark time of the year, you know, I wanted to do an episode about that, and also some, you know, give you some mindset strategies and just talk about what to expect and how to work and heal and how to handle mental illness in the wintertime. So I decided to randomly do this episode, and I have a good friend, Joseph Fusario. I said it right?
Fusaro.
See, I knew I was going to screw it up. I've known him now for, 18 months, I just was like, wait, how do you pronounce your last name? I'm so bad with last names. And I met Joseph actually at the beginning of COVID. He was producing a show called The Tomorrow Talk. And they found me, I think, through something astrology. And they asked me to be on their show. And I remember still pretty it was like quarantine time, right? Wasn't it the end of March of 2020?
It was like a week or two before everything locked down, actually. I think it was either the end of February, beginning of March.
Oh, crap. It was even before that?
Yeah, we were kind of like, what's going on? I remember those guys came in and like everyone else who worked in the building we were recording in was like running out and taking all their stuff and being like, we're not coming back for 3 months. And like, we're sitting up there like, all right, we're going to try and get one more show before it all falls apart.
Just one more. Yeah, I guess you guys were in person then. Now that I'm remembering, you guys were in kind of your studio and in person there. And it's funny because we probably, if we go back and listen to the episode I did with them, I think we talked about like, is everything really going to shut down? This is crazy. We'll be in next week. And here we are this, 18, 19 months later.
Yeah, that might have been the last one that I did in there. And I haven't been back.
You have not been back. Well, let me tell you, since then, I ended up not meeting in person, but we've done a few episodes and become friends on social media with Joseph. And also, one of the things I wanted to say and thank you for is that since that moment, you have been such a huge supporter of my podcast. You listen, you tell me what you like about it, you fill in, you've rode the wave, you watched the wave of the changes of my podcast for the last almost 2 years, and you have really supported it. So I knew, besides I needed you on this episode and to talk so much about this episode, I really just wanted to also say that how much I appreciate you and I thank you for your support.
I mean, you're welcome, but I don't do that stuff unless I actually like care about this stuff. So I knew when I was listening to you with those guys, because I love those guys too, and I love the content that they're putting out. It's like really powerful. And I know when I heard you on the show, I'm just like, she gets it. She gets it. I don't know what it is. And yeah, I just started following since. And honestly, your show has become, over the last like couple months at least, like it's become like therapeutic for me. I mean, I Aww. Always listen to it, but like now I'm like, oh, like the stuff that you're going through in your life is relatable to me in different ways. I think maybe, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, talking about your relationships or your kids or what you're going through, you know, with your technical problems and all that stuff. Like there's something going on in my life that I can relate to it. So I've just kind of felt like that, like friendship since I first heard you with them.
That's amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much. And I can feel that. And you have had me on your show, Good Air, twice, the podcast. And, yes. and that's when I learned about your history, your past and your present with mental illness and how you're making a wave and how you spent a large chunk of your adult life really helping and advocating for mental illness.
Yeah. So in my 20s, I went through a really tough time, prescription medication, addiction, in and out of rehabs a couple of times.
Wait, let me ask you this. Was it prescription? Yeah. Like, so you kind of like you didn't know then that you were having some mental health issues or the underlining, you were like, I just need to escape my body. I need to get high. I need to do something else that distracts me from my mind.
So when I was like 17, 18, got to college and September 11th happened a week into my first week of college.
Oh, and shit.
And it kind of just, you know, it went from like, oh, we're here to like party. And I was in like business school and it's like, we're going to party for 4 years and I'm going to make money. And it kind of just went like, it's like partying and money, like really important to me anymore. Like, is that, you know, it was just like a really like weird, strange, bad time. And I couldn't let go of it. I couldn't process it. And I had some other things going on in my life. So I started seeing, you know, therapist and psychiatrist at the time. And they had prescribed me Adderall and Xanax, which.
What a combo. Deadly combo for, you know, for that.
Yeah, worked for a few months. And then I quickly needed more and more and more. And then I would take it and I would like, you know, get physically ill, mentally extremely ill, and I would stop. But then when I stopped, I would have withdrawal. So then it was like it would get worse. And then I kind of did that dance for a few years of like going on and off it for, you know, 3 to 6 month periods. And
okay.
And then in my mid 20s, kind of like, you know, screw it, like I need this stuff, and kept taking it. And
so you finally like, had like sort of like you succumbed to the illness, to the power of drugs. You were like, I don't want to, I'm just going to just live my life this way. Because I remember feeling that way in my addiction, like this isn't changing. I'm not changing. I'm fucked up inside my head. And like, I'm going to just give in to drugs.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I need this in order to do anything. So I tried to do a couple years of, I dropped out of a bunch of colleges, tried to work a job for a couple years, and was taking a ton of meds just to get up in the morning and go to bed at night, taking a ridiculous amount of meds. And finally, in my late 20s.
During that time, real quick, did you feel just like a shell of a person? Like you had no, did you have joy in doing other things besides taking meds, or was it just trying to keep a baseline?
Yeah, nothing made me happy. Relationships. I mean, I couldn't feel love or acceptance from others. I certainly didn't love or accept myself, and I couldn't feel it from anyone else. So like, I got myself in all these relationships where like person was like madly in love with me, wanted me to get better, like wanted to do all these things for me. And like, I honestly could just see that recently over the last couple of years. And we're talking, this is like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So I just kind of blocked out everybody and, you know, kept it to, Adderall and Xanax. And then in my late 20s, went from just depression and anxiety to, it turned into like I was hospitalized with schizoaffective and bipolar 1 disorder.
Oh, wow.
Psychosis a couple times.
What happened during that time? Was it just over, you know, like years of you avoiding the mental illness, avoiding the pain, avoiding all of that, and it just, and just pushing aside with drugs, and then you just kind of snapped, everything kind of got triggered to a much larger degree?
Yeah. You know, at around 26, I'd say I was living with three friends, and we all had jobs at the beginning and like kind of did our own thing, but like would come together on the weekends and stuff. And then after a few weeks, like I started like kind of withdrawing, and like I was just taking the pills. And then like one weekend I'd do like mushrooms, and like another weekend I'd do coke. And like I kind of just, you know, totally like it was like the pills, and then the weekends like I was adding other things to it.
Yeah.
And at around that time, I just like that January of that year, we were all living together. I just walked away from my job. I was just like, yeah, I'm not feeling this anymore. like I was there 2 years, didn't have a college degree. Like, you know, the people who had given me the job actually set me up with a decent job. It was like I had room to grow in it and stuff. And I just couldn't see that, you know, I was being like given all these opportunities at that time. I was just young and stupid, basically.
You couldn't see. And also, I want to say something before we get into what happened with your kind of like big psychosis. What happened with that is that it's, I think for people who don't understand mental illness, haven't been around it, you know, that much to really see the depths of it, like people don't understand that it's, they think, oh, you're lazy. Oh, you don't have the motivation to go out and do and live life. No, literally your mind has taken over so much that you can't even figure out or have the drive to often do the productive, normal human stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis, right? You know, I hear so many things with mental illness. Oh, they're weak. Oh, they don't have discipline. Oh, they're so this. Oh, they're so that. But I don't think people understand the depths of mental illness and how much your mind can take control in that dark sort of way.
It's I think that mental illness is very physical. I think that there's, well, we know that there's something wrong in the brain that, yeah. You know, is similar to somebody with a neurological disease or not disease, but like condition, like autism or something like that. But we as a society, we don't really look at it that way. You know, we look at it like, you know, Joe did some drugs and made a ton of mistakes and quit his job. And now he's going to be a mess until he figures it out, basically. And around the time, so when I started, like when I lost my job and then, like, you know, I was running out of money, couldn't make, you know, the rent payments or the car payments. I think that the underlying issue was definitely the drugs and the depression. But I think the like traumatic experience of losing everything, I think that that's, you know, looking back, I think that's what sparked the psychosis, because I never had psychosis until I started like losing everything. And then I think when you start losing everything, it like kind of jumpstarts the nervous system and the brain into like this fear mode that
like fear overdrive.
Fear overdrive, and it was just like out of control from age 26 to 30. I mean, I was lit up. I just felt like lit up 24/7, stopped sleeping, stopped eating. At that time, I think my average weight has always been around like, you know, 190 to 200 as an adult. I think at that time I was down to like 161 or something like that, because it was just like no sleep, no eating, and just pills.
Wow.
Like that's all it was.
Wow. So when your first hospitalization was in your late 20s.
I had tried a couple rehabs to get off the pills when I was, you know, probably like 21, 23-ish. Yeah. But it was like one of those things, I'd go in for a week, they'd detox you off Xanax, and then like they'd bring you into the, you know, the rehab center, and I'd read the blue book for a week, and I'd be like, this is bullshit. And like,
then they hand you, go find some meetings.
Right. And so it just didn't really feel like it just felt like a Band-Aid kind of thing. And then that's in my late 20s. Yeah, it was, I think all my hospitalizations are actually forced hospitalizations. Like I was like talking to myself, walking around the house or something.
Oh, wow.
Parents either, you know, called local police, because we don't have a crisis team in our area.
So okay.
It's basically like police brought me to the hospital. Like, I think it's like 8 to 10 times in my late 20s.
Wow. Now, do you think at that time you were definitely, I mean, it goes hand in hand, like suicidal? Were there any suicide attempts?
When I left that house with my friends, I came home for the summer. So, which was weird. I stopped doing drugs that summer because I had no money. Like I literally just sat in my bedroom that entire summer, but I tripped like you would have thought I was on like acid and mushrooms. Wow. All summer, like relived my life in three times in ways that like I'm not even sure if that's how it really happened, but just like kept reliving like the worst parts of my life, and I think looking back, ways that were worse than they actually happened. Like I was really like beating myself up.
Wow. So yeah. When was your first like awakening? When was your first spiritual awakening?
So the hospitalizations, I'm going to be honest, like they stopped the damage, you know, from getting worse.
Yep.
But I never felt like any healing from any of them when I left. I always Same. Felt like this emptiness and like, well, now what? Now I'm a bad person. And you know, kind of had no idea what to do when I left. And then my last hospitalization, like 2010-ish, I got out and they gave me 2 weeks of medication, you know, like an antipsychotic and like something for anxiety. And I was like, oh, okay, like 2 weeks, like that doesn't give me much time to find a new doctor or anything. So I'm scouring like insurance books, or at the time I was actually on Medicare and Medicaid. So I'm like, you know, scouring the, it's August in New York, no therapist or psychiatrist is around in August.
They're all at the Hamptons for the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. So I get to this guy and it's his nurse practitioner, and I call and I'm like, I don't even know if you can prescribe medication. I was like, but I just got out of a psychiatric hospital and I need to see somebody. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I can prescribe. He's like, why don't you come in? Went and saw him. First of all, I could just tell like he was calm. Like, he wasn't one of those people that was just like, you know, checking off boxes and then, you know, making sure, like, you know, what do we have to do with this guy? Because that's, once you get into the system and you can't pay for your own doctors and stuff, you kind of get into this world where, like, other people are making health decisions for you. It's, isn't that, it's terrifying. Truth? It's fucking terrifying. And can I curse? I'm sorry.
Yes, please swear. Of course. You should know that. Swear away.
I kind of thought that. So he said to me, it was like first or second appointment. I think the first appointment, he was like just trying to make sure that, you know, he wanted to get me drug tested. And he said, I'll see you. He's like, but you can't do drugs. He's like, we're going to get your mind clear. He's like, but you can't do drugs. And I'm like, I don't really like this guy to begin with. So I took the drug test. Like, I passed that time. I went back to him the next time. And he's like, I was telling him like all the problems, how bad my life was, everything. And he's like, you know, you deserve to be happy, right?
Aww.
And I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, you serious?
Like, no, and no one's ever like turned that switch on for a second, or even understanding that he even saw that in your life.
Yeah. So he said that. And honestly, we, you know, I was still on the medications that I had to, like, you know, wean off of for a while. But we got on like a meditation program. I started with like MBSR, Jon Kabat-Zinn, and just like loving kindness from Kristen Neff, like real simple stuff.
Yeah.
And like for the first couple of months, like I'm like shaking while I'm trying to sit there, like meditating, like literally shaking and sweating, grinding my teeth. And then I noticed after a month or two, I'm like, I would have like a half hour of peace after I meditated. And I hadn't had a half hour of like peace in my body or like quiet in my mind going back to when I was probably like 13 or 14 years old.
Wow.
I can remember feeling like that. So, it just progressed. And now we're like, you know, doing like Mahamudra and Dzogchen and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's,
wow.
It's just like, I don't know. There was like no turning back with him. I trusted him. And, he got me into this world that I probably as a teenager would have been like, that stuff's stupid. Like, that'll never work. Like, you're going to tell me I tried all these meds, all these programs, all this stuff, and like breathing is going to help me. Like, are you serious? And so far, so good. So,
I mean, it's funny how calming the mind and just stopping the mind for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, how much that does for you. Just like you said, at first it began, you know, half hour peace. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure I'm correct, as you kept going along your journey of meditation and writing, you probably got an hour of peace, you know, 5 hours of mental peace, you know, to maybe a couple years getting 24 hours of peace. Is that kind of how that built up?
Definitely evolved. And I've had some times in there where things were going well and I took a couple of weeks off and I quickly learned like why I need to come back to it. that seems to be like my new thing, is like I don't, you know, go into like psychosis or rage or, you know, self-destructive mode anymore. But I do when, you know, when I either like start a new job or, you know, my last relationship, like I'll just be in this mode of like doing, and I'll step back from the meditation and then like I start to feel like, you know, the neck tighten up and like the intrusive thoughts, and I come right back to it.
Isn't that funny? And something I've been reflecting on the last couple of weeks, and I want to know your opinion on this. Why is it that it's so easy, right, for us to go all day and do bad habits, right? Not even just bad habits, just not the most, you know, soul enhancing habits, right? Whether it's watching TV, listening to music that doesn't say words that really are positive, running around, talking, doing all this. But yet, just if we could take a half hour, but it could even be stretched throughout the day in 10 minute increments of like, whether breathing exercises, meditating, listen to someone talk about something positive or thought-provoking your soul, go outside for a walk, you know, ask someone about themselves. Why do those and sticking with those seem to be so hard for our mind to do, even for myself, like those kind of soul spiritual principles? Why can it be so hard to stick to those when it's so, you know, but it's so easy to go out and do things that aren't the best for us?
That's a good question. It's like, why do I really want that McDonald's every time I pass?
Yes.
I think it's like that because it's that quick fix, right?
Yeah.
It's something that will give us a moment of a feeling. I don't even want to say happiness, right? Because when you're in that work mode, you're not necessarily happy, like when you're overworking and trying to like push projects and like do all these things. But it's a feeling. So I think sometimes we just crave feeling. And sometimes after meditating for a while, at least, you kind of separate yourself from the real world. So I think that, or not the real world, who knows what the real world is, but you separate from everything else that's going on. And I think once in a while, we just want to like dip our toes in and just like see what's going on, like, you know, touch base. It's a reason I only like check in on the news once a week now. It's like, I cannot bombard myself with that from either side. Like, it's just like, once you want to end your life, like you can't really pick sides anymore. It's like you just gotta like do what's healthy.
That's very true, and I'm happy that you also brought up about the news part, because I stopped watching the news occasionally. It's on maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and my life dramatically changed. I always feel like, obviously, if it's something major, you're going to see it on social media everywhere within 2 seconds, or my clients fill me in. But you know what I started to realize is that even if you're not clicking on those articles, right? Let's say you're on Facebook and you're not clicking on any of the articles, or you're on Instagram and you're really not reading it, you're still taking in, and we're talking about news right now, you're still taking in like grandma got ran over by a reindeer, right? And say she didn't, but let's say you just read that title is still going into your mind, it's still processing, and then it's labeling in your mind of bad things happening. It's going and it's creating, I think, that feeling of like depressed, distressed. And it's crazy. A lot of my clients, how so many people let the news kind of, and again, for good reason for sometimes, but like really affect their daily mental health or just their daily spiritual health, just watching the news. And did that start to happen with you?
Yeah. I got into like some serious holes. Just thinking that everything else in the world was wrong except me, and like if all these things on TV and on the internet would just change, then my life would get better. And you know how that goes, like that's you just keep falling when you get into that mode.
Funny. So what got you into, so you used to be part, you were a big mental health advocate organizations, when did you find that healing, like when did you find like, hey, wait, I'm not alone here and I need to go out there and really start helping people or tell people that they aren't alone? When did that begin, that kind of healing journey for that?
Yeah. So probably about 3 years into it took me 3 years. At that time I stopped watching the news. I was living at home. I basically structured my life in a way for 3 years that, you know, there was like no outside influence. It was just like me, anything that the therapist told me to do, going for walks every day, you know, keep meditating, keep journaling, keep taking care of myself, like whatever those things were. Everybody has different things, right? I did that for about 3 years. And I guess after 3 years, it was like, you know what? I was like, I'm thinking back to the times I was in the hospital, and then I would come home and I, you know, go to a family event around Thanksgiving or Christmas or something. And I was in the hospital for like 3 months out of the last 4 or 5 months, and no one would say a word about it. And I'm like, wow, I'm like, did I do something wrong? Like, did I, you know, and I just thought that was the craziest thing, because if I had like a physical illness or broke a bone or something like that, they would have been like, oh, how's your knee doing? Or how's this going? Or like, are you feeling better? Like, and I just thought it was the strangest thing that I would spend months in the hospital and no one would say a thing about it. Like, no one asked me how you're doing. And I was like, this is going on with lots and lots of people. I was like, I need to get involved in a way to like try and open up a conversation about this. I thought the only thing that was crazy, if you want to use the term crazy, about mental health, is that no one's talking about it, or everyone's scared to talk about it.
You're right. Everyone's scared, and they're scared to bring it up to say, hey, how are you? I know that you weren't doing, how are you feeling now? Why? That's interesting. So you were like, yeah, let me break the stigma, because I think there is still not as much as there was 7 years ago, 10 years ago, but there's still this stigma around, you know, mental health. You can't see it physically. I mean, you can, if you know how it's manifesting, then you can see it physically, but it's something, you know what I mean? So I think you're right. People have a hard time, you know, talking about that.
Yeah. And then as the deeper I got into it, I realized like, it's not so much that, you know, the parents, brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles don't want to talk about it. It's that no one really knows how to talk about it. Wow. Because the generation before us, they didn't, one, they didn't talk about it. Two, if someone did, like, you put yourself in the place where, like, people might have thought that you had a problem. So it was like we thought it was taboo 5 or 10 years ago. Think about like 30 or 40 years ago, like extremely taboo. So it's been like a long, slow, like grinding process, but I feel like people are talking about it now, and it's been nice to see in a broader audience, but just within my family and friends, like having people feel safe to come to me and seeing, like, you know, my parents and sister, like being able to talk to their friends and extended family about it. It's been a beautiful thing, because I think that we can't change like what happened to us, but we can hopefully make it a little bit easier.
Easier. Yeah. So you made that path with being an advocate and running support groups and doing all the things you do. Did you gain a lot of healing through that?
I gained a lot of healing beyond like it's like an intangible, like nuanced healing that you can't get from just reading a list of like, go for a walk and meditate and like, you know, eat healthy food and stuff. There's something about those connections, and you learn it positive and you also learn it negative. You also learn how to let go too, because sometimes people aren't in a place where they're ready to start doing the work to heal, or where they're in a place where they can notice that they need help. So you really learn, like, you gain the community aspect from it and the friendships, but you also like learn how to let go and set boundaries. And like, it was a wild ride.
That was a wild ride. So where, how has your mental illness, how has everything you've gone through? How did you see that community with COVID, right? How did you see the shifts, the changing? How did you, because it went from, again, the big, you know, to all of a sudden, with COVID, we were all isolated and dark, and the whole world was going crazy, you know? Did you have any effect for yourself, or were you pretty well prepared? You know, what about people that you had been helping or known? How did they handle all of that?
I'm going to be honest, personally.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I've done this before. Like when COVID had, like not the
isolation
the virus,
part.
Yeah. Like I'm obviously it's terrible. And I even ended up having it in January, and that was terrible. But the isolation part, sitting at home, I guess from the meditation and the fact that I spent those, you know, that summer and those 3 years at home, like reliving my life in all these ways. And like nothing has ever, and I don't think will ever, beat me up the way my own mind did at that time. Mm. So, yeah, the like 2020 didn't really affect me. I mean, there were times like that was a dark winter. It felt
that
like,
what last and, winter 2020 yeah, to 2021 that was a dark
yeah,
winter, wasn't it?
It was just dark. Like there was a lot of shifts and things that like would bring hope and then like, you know, fall apart, and it was just like a lot of heartbreak and pain. But yeah, I actually felt like I did better, and I noticed that all the people that I had worked with in those organizations seemed like they handled it well. Like they may have had depression or anxiety, but it didn't really look like it was getting the best of those people. And what I've seen is that the people who always kind of like thought that mental health wasn't like a big deal and, you know, didn't really take theirs serious or have like their own like distorted view on what mental health is, I kind of saw those people struggling. So it was like a shift of the people that I had seen who took the last 3 to 5 years to take care of themselves were like, all right, this sucks, but I'm just gonna like figure out a way to get through it. And then the people were like, mental health's kind of ridiculous. You're just weak. Like they seem to really have an issue.
Ended up having kind of seeing how that is. Now as a kid within your support groups with everything, was there any common denominator amongst everyone that was in there for mental illness? Like did a lot of people have childhood trauma, suppressed things that they were never allowed, a lot of genetic components to it? You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of different things that make up mental illness, you know, but was there anything common amongst everyone?
You know, it was, I think about that all the time, but I think everybody came from such a different experience, at least that I met. You know, some people had money, some people were poor, some people, you know, had been through like big traumas, like losing somebody that they loved when they were younger. And some people hadn't. It was a mix of everybody, honestly. Like, I think that those traumas and stuff can trigger if you're prone for mental illness. But yeah. I think there's also people, I met people who like had the perfect wife and kids, had a house, had the perfect job, and like everything was good. And some of them struggle the most. So wow. I do think that trauma absolutely can
trigger.
Yeah, absolutely. But I saw people that on the outside, you would think everything was going great and they were having a really hard time too.
Oh, wow. Wow. Why do you, you know, again, because we're doing this headed towards the fall equinox. So now we're headed towards, like I said earlier, the darker part of the year. Why do you think during this time do people in general that don't have serious mental illness have a hard time with it? Like, you know, and people with mental illness have an even harder time. People in my own life, I see it really come out in the wintertime. Why do you think that is?
I think that maybe there's a high that comes along with summer for some people.
Oh, wow.
You can be outside, you can be social. There's lots of things to do. There's lots of people around. And then, you know, when it starts to get dark, you know, you're in longer, the sun's not out as long. You're cold, you kind of isolate, and you can't get that same satisfaction. So you do kind of have to go in.
You have to go inward.
Once you get to like November, it's kind of like, ooh, we're entering that time where I gotta look at me, and I gotta think about my relationships, the people close to me, what I'm doing, what makes me tick. And I think that's why, you know, apps like Netflix are doing so well, because as soon as people start to go in a little bit, they're like, oh, no, let me
distract.
Watch a movie about a chess star that's taking pills or something.
That's funny. I always feel like winter for me, at least now, the last few years, I really started to change my mindset on it and appreciate it and try to be one with it, essentially, because I realized that's like the time when it's most quiet, but as you know, I'm always trying to walk a path of self-awareness. So it's really a time for me that I actually allow myself and have the time to work on myself, right? To do what you just said. I meditate way more in the wintertime. I write in the wintertime. I exercise more in the wintertime. Like, I just feel like I am able to actually just focus on myself and work on myself in a better way. And so I think that helps. And one of the things I want to talk about is I think that people, and I always say this, should be working out their minds from a young age as much as they work out their bodies, right? Or worry about your mind, feeding your mind as much as you worry about what you feed your body, just like that. And so, and I think as we go on as you know, mental health advocates as such as yourself and other people, we're starting to realize, whoa, that mind really we need to be constantly working on it, because it's so tricky and it goes different ways and we need to try to get ahead of it. So what are some things going into winter that you like to do to help your mindset, to keep you out of that seasonal depression, that winter depression, whatever it is that comes up?
Well, I was thinking about this last night, and first I had like the list. So obviously, you know, these are the things that we tell people when we used to do the advocacy, like, you know, the meditation, be aware of the content you take in. Like we already talked about, be very, very aware of the content you take in. If all you're doing is watching the news 24/7, like you're going to feel like garbage.
Yeah.
You know, read, get like a self-help book, get something that's going to take you out of that for a little while. Movement, diet, try and stay social. Don't guilt yourself though. Mm. Like if you don't do one of these things, don't guilt yourself like that. I think that that's more important than everything. If you do watch Netflix for a day, don't guilt yourself. Just don't do it for like, you know, 3 months straight. but the big one, I think that make sure that you're staying in alignment with who you are. Mm. Like that I think for me is the big one. Like if you're hanging out with somebody who's just like bringing you down all the time, or like doesn't believe in you or doesn't believe in your project, you know, as a creator, sometimes it can be like exhausting to like go be around people who are like, well, what are you doing? Like, what
I know. 80% of people are like that aren't creators of some sort of creative creators.
And that's a job. And like, you're able to live like that. You know, like you just, stay in alignment, because it's easy to get sucked into like all these things that could take you off track in the winter. You time or me time, or like make time for yourself. Whatever that looks like, you know, remember the things that you enjoy doing. I don't know if it's going to a coffee shop and hanging out. I know that sometimes the weather doesn't permit it depending where you are, but just go outside. Even if you don't want to go for a long walk, take some deep breaths. I can't tell you how many times I was sitting inside, like watching football or basketball all day, and like just felt, you feel like the vice on your head, right? Like, but you won't get up and walk away from the TV. Like, just sometimes I'll just go outside and just take like a few deep breaths, and like, and I'll be like, oh, okay, like I'm all right. Like, there, this world is still going on, because we get trapped in like in our own head in its own little world,
trapped in our own head. That is a good way. And sometimes I know with mental illness, or even if you're listening to this and maybe it's a sibling, a friend, a lover, someone, you're saying like, it can be hard to get out of your mind. You know what I mean? It can be like, you, like someone's trying to tell you this, you're hearing what they're saying, and it's making sense to you on one surface level, but you're not, your mind is just rejecting it. And I think there's a large, and you know, not to say the science, but there's a large science to it. Like, our body gets used to even more so those negative feelings, those negative ions, those negative things, those negative thinking. It almost becomes addicted. That it takes work to also implement a more positive, you know, way about life, implement new strategies to help your mind, implement that stuff. Like, that is, takes a lot of work, a lot of writing, a lot of training, a lot of mental discipline. And sometimes with mental illness, again, and variations, you're going up against that, you know, you're fighting that. Like, you, it's like two things are going like boom.
Yeah, it's, well, I work with one of my podcasters is like a specialist in neurochemicals, and she says it takes 21 days of practice for a change to start to go into effect. So if you're doing affirmations, I think it's funny, because I have a podcast for affirmations too.
Oh, that's cool.
And Untimely Affirmations, quick plug, sorry.
Of course, Untime, I'm writing that down, Untimely Affirmations. You never even told me of this before, Untimely Affirmations.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a new thing, but I've been doing it for a few months, and I'm all about the affirmations, but you have to realize, like, and I'm the first person to tell you, they're not going to fix you by themselves. Like, no. They're, what they do, and this is, people listen once and they'll be like, oh, that's cute, but they're stupid, you know. well you're not allowing them. It's kind of something you mentioned in your podcast, I guess it'll be 2 weeks by the time this one comes out, the astrology one. He said, the guy you were interviewing said that what you want astrology to do is like bring up things. You don't want it to map out exactly what's going to happen in your life. You want it to allow certain things to come up, and then, you know, look back later and see if you could like put the pieces together. Wow. That's kind of like an affirmation. We'll use a simple one. I am happy. Right. Like, we know you're not happy right now, but what does the word happy bring up? Mm. Does it bring up something from your past that hurts? Well, maybe that's something you need to like bring to your therapist, or maybe something you need to work on your own. Does it bring up things that used to make you happy when you were younger? Well, maybe that's, you know, some things that you need to start doing again. Wow. So it's not that the sentence of the affirmation itself is going to heal you, but it's like all that like subconscious psychological work that's going on behind the scenes that you have to allow up. So it's,
and
I'm very careful when I tell people like do affirmations. Like, this sentence alone is not like a cure or anything like that. It's going to help you dig deeper and do work. That's all they're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like you had said, your first therapist was like, you know, you deserve to be happy. And then I just thought, I am happy. And I'm thinking to myself, what comes up when you were saying that? What comes up for me or different people? And I am happy. I am happy. I am happy. And really, you know, in that sentence, okay, well, what just like you're saying, well, why do I feel like I'm not happy? What's happening that I don't feel happy, you know? Yeah.
And that's the tough one to allow up.
Yeah.
It's like, and I think you're going to try and fight it.
I love affirmations. And what I think is, it's such a good way to to fight negative thinking that you may have been telling yourself since you were five, right? Or you may have been hearing since you were five or six, or combat. And I've taken it, sometimes maybe you have done this. Years ago, I started to really, especially when it came to mindset tricks, listen to Bob Proctor, or, you know, old, I love him, old, you know, kind of the laws of the universe, OG guy right there. And he would take the affirmations, but then also like creating them into a habit and changing. Like I remember, I don't remember what the affirmation was. It was 6-7 years ago, but I wrote it every day for 50 times a day for like 5 days. And I wrote it with my left hand and I'm right-handed. And wow. Yes.
I've never
and
heard that one.
Yes, he has a bunch of them. And a lot of that is really to, you know, again, I might be, have been, he, I haven't heard this, but in my life since I was five, I may have heard, you're never going to be happy. You're not happy. Nothing makes you happy. You know, that's say parents, right? I mean, I don't know if my parents ever yelled, nothing makes you happy. Nothing, you're not happy. That all goes into your subconscious. So too, like kind of changing that to start, then your mind starts instantly thinking, I am happy, right? It doesn't say I'm not happy. It starts to, after 21 days, maybe doing that, I am happy.
I always say it opens up the possibility, because yes, without opening up the possibility, it's never going to happen. You could say that like, oh, being happy is stupid, this, that. Well, yeah, of course. Like if you think happiness is stupid, if you think money is stupid, if you think all, you know, success is stupid, well, then you're never going to have it. You're putting up a wall in front of yourself.
Yes.
I'm not saying if you say I'm successful, you're going to get, you know, someone's going to send you $1 million next week. Like
that'd be nice. That claim.
But maybe you start doing some things that like, that you love, and you start working on in some areas that make you happy. And, you know, you work towards that goal rather than just shutting it off.
I love that. What do you hope for the future of mental illness as far as how we handle it in our country, the world as a whole? What do you hope? What would you love to see?
I would love for it to, you know, look the same as physical illness, like when somebody's struggling. And sometimes the problem with mental illness is that sometimes when people are in it, they get angry and, you know, become like not violent, but like their words feel violent. It's like, oh, like, you know, so it kind of scares people off.
Yeah.
But I think that I wish that I want the people who are in there to know that it doesn't matter what the people on the outside think. And then I want the people on the outside to not take those hurtful words to heart. When somebody is struggling, because really what's happening in that person who has depression or anxiety or whatever, schizophrenia, they're in so much pain that the only way they can convey that to you, because there is like a speech issue when you have serious mental illness where you can't convey what you're actually thinking, you know, through voice. And it just, they just want to basically hurt you to show you how much they're hurting.
Yeah.
So like I wish the person on the inside would stop worrying about what the person on the outside thinks and just take care of yourself. And I wish the person on the outside would not take those things to heart and then like hold grudges or you know, kick them out of the family and stuff like that. Because I see so many times where like a schizophrenic person or someone with schizophrenia will, you know, say all these hurtful things. And it's like, yeah, but why are you taking it to heart? Because you know they're struggling with like this debilitating mental illness. Like,
yeah.
So it's
and I think to piggyback on that, like a deeper, greater understanding for people with it, because just goes hand in hand. 98.9% of people who have met, you know, that are using drugs have mental illness and pain, right? So again, that ties into people just saying, oh, they're just doing that. Like people that are again listening to this, like try to look at people with mental illness from radical acceptance, understanding, know that they're in so much pain, like you said, that's the only way they know how to reflect or how to handle that pain.
Yeah, it's not a crutch. I'm so sick of hearing
it's like not.
People are just using depression to get attention and stuff like that. I'm just like no.
No.
You don't, no one wants to be depressed.
No, something you said, and I've talked openly about it, and my kid's father, he will, like, it's not a shot that he has a ton of mental illness, and it comes and goes just like that. I've known him for 10 years now, and he did a couple tours in Iraq, and things like that. And I think my relationship with him from the beginning is always been, besides my own mental illness and that played out, but when I really got to have it on the other side and then seeing that and getting an understanding, he really opened my eyes up to that. Just like you said, they can't, when he's in one of those states, he can't convey at all what his mind's thinking, you know, and he can't talk, he can't see. And through that allowed me my experience with him for years and understanding and our relationship together, which is, it's wonderful. And I hope it's healing for him. It's allowed me to then gain deeper understanding with my mother and hers or other people with that, you know, and learning how to work with them than against them.
Yeah, I would love for it to be looked at as more of a neurological condition than a mental illness. And yes, obviously there are like, you know, emotional and behavioral things that people will have to work on. But I think that the main point, the source of the issue lies in that there's a neurological condition. Yes. And when it gets to that, like you go to a neurologist because you have depression, that's when I'll feel like more comfortable with the system as a whole.
Wow, that's so true. And even if you looked up pictures, like they should be posting those more with things. Like you can look up people's brains when they're in a state of depression or various things, and their brain literally changes. You can see on there.
Yeah. Like it has like the gray matter in certain places. It's just not lighting up. It's just not lighting up. So what can we do to treat that while we work on the behavioral stuff, and the emotional stuff? Because those are things that as we get older, like when you're younger, you can kind of get away with that stuff. But then, as I realized in my 20s, like those are things that I had to work on. But I wish that somebody had focused on the actual like brain condition that was happening.
Yeah. So hopefully that will be the future. Of mental illness. And I think it will as we progress in that direction. Now, for anyone listening that is maybe struggling with mental illness or really understanding that mental illness is what's happening to them or what has been happening to them in their life when things didn't make sense, what advice do you have, at least for starting to get on a path of recovery, some sort of recovery?
I would say don't be afraid to get help.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to get professional help. Like we could sit here all day and tell you to, affirmation yourself better, meditate yourself better, eat, drink juices and stuff. But if it comes down to it, if you feel that you've been sad or depressed for more than a few months and it's starting to get involved with like your friendships, your relationships, your jobs and stuff like that, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one, because it took me a long time to trust therapists and the system. And I had all these ideas that, and don't be afraid to switch therapies either. You're not tied to one. Like if you go to one for a month or two and you're like, this person's terrible, they're not helping me. Don't be afraid to try another one. But
absolutely. I hear that a lot with sometimes people, I didn't like my therapist. Well, there's a lot of other ones out there, and it's a relationship, and you got to find the one that vibes with you.
Yeah. And believe in yourself. I mean, it sounds so corny and cliche, I was sitting in a hotel room in Los Angeles with, a half a Coke can to like to my wrist, like ready to end my life. And was like, I'm done. And cops knocked on my door. And because an ex had called them, because I guess I had sent her a picture, told her that I was thinking about killing myself. And it was them knocking on the door at like 6 a.m. when they said, we checked every hotel in Venice Beach, California, because we got a tip that like you were here, but we didn't know where.
Wow.
And if that didn't happen, like, I don't know if I'd be here today.
Wow.
So when I tell you that, like, you can get better, you really can. And I'm not just like saying that. Like I've been to the point of where I was just about done with this earth, and now honestly on a day-to-day, like I'm pretty happy with the way things are going. Do I still have life stressors? Are there still like relationship issues? Are there still job issues? Are there still things I don't like about myself? Yes, but you learn to appreciate the little things and just like life overall. And that's possible again. So if you are depressed right now, know that however you felt the last time you were happy, like we can get you there.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Joseph. We're getting to the end. That was amazing. We're getting to the end of this episode. Now, one of the ways you help yourself or help yourself process different your mind a little bit is through writing poetry too. And so that has really helped, right?
Oh man, that's been the one constant in my life since I was like 13 or 14. Anytime I've ever been stressed out when I was younger, I would only write when I was stressed, you know, like something bad was going on. And then as I got into my mid 20s or so, I was like, oh, I need to be doing this all the time. And for a while, I think I wrote myself into rock bottom. Like I was writing about how bad everything was, like my life is terrible. And like things just kept getting worse. And around the time when I found this therapist, I was like, wait, I was like, if I have to change my mindset, like maybe I need to change my writing. And like, even at the beginning, I'd write like 20 lines of how bad everything was. It's like, but can I end with a little bit of hope? So all of my writing is like me trying to get the truth out, like, you know, whether it's good or bad at that time. But then at the end, like leaving a little bit of room, like opening up that possibility to keep going rather than like putting up a wall and shutting myself down. So that's, I hope that that's how it comes off to the reader too, because I know a lot of people don't write and can't write. So, you know, my thought was I can't write people into rock bottom the way I did to myself. So I hope that my writing comes off as me like flipping that script.
Yeah, I definitely think it does. I love seeing your writing. I love seeing everything that you post, you do. And again, I know for you, you are definitely someone who is out there just in your general energy, right, is to help someone else. I can sense that in your writing and the way you go about social media and the podcast. It's more centered towards, you know, I hope that this is real, like this writing is real, and I hope that this helps you. And I think that definitely is how that comes across. Now tell everyone where they can find you on social media, your podcast, everything.
Yeah, so social @sincerely_Joe. So just Sincerely Joe on Instagram. And I just started a TikTok where I'm reading some poetry on there. That at the beginning, that was a little overwhelming, but I think I'm getting the hang of it.
That's exciting.
You have to find your niche, I think, on TikTok, or else it's like, what's happening here?
I know. You do.
But so Sincerely_Joe on all the major apps. My website is unreadletters.com, and all the poetry books are on Amazon. And the first three, like a portion of the proceeds goes to three of my favorite mental health organizations. So you're not just helping me and yourself by reading it, but you're also helping those three organizations.
Wow. Just one more thing. Can you say what those three health mental, in case anyone's just curious for their own to look into, what are the three mental health organizations that you really believe in?
So it's I will give you, NAMI is probably the best one if you a friend or family.
How do you spell that?
NAMI, but it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Okay.
They're the ones with like the, you know, big time like resources and like a call line, you know, where you can actually, you know, get you or your family some help or some, you know, directional advice on where to go. Another one is This Is My Brave, which is an amazing organization. That's where I read my poetry on stage for the first time, going in a week or two. It'll be 6 years. First time I got up on stage and read my poetry. And they're all about like the arts and mental health, but they're not like an emergency. You know, if you're having an emergency or like need help with a friend or family, that's not who you go to. And then there's another one called JCK Foundation in Westchester, New York. And that's like more of a suicide prevention organization. And they do a lot of stuff locally, nationally, and even started internationally, just tons of suicide prevention and awareness, because that's another word that, you know, they block the word suicide on social media.
They do.
So it's like, yeah, So it's or like they filter what's allowed to come up and what isn't, which I understand you don't want to perpetuate suicide. But at the same time, like if somebody was suicidal and felt that way for years and then they finally like, you know, work up the courage to share some artwork and then tag it suicide. And now no one looks at it because it says the word suicide. Mm. So I think we need to take, you know, not only the stigma away from mental health and mental illness, but also the word suicide is not a bad word.
Like, no, not at all.
People know that they're allowed to come back from that and they're allowed to talk about it. And that's how we heal from it.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, Joseph, this has been quite a healing episode. And I think a lot of people, a lot of listeners have gotten this out. And I hope that as a whole, we will, you know, move beyond the stereotypes and whatever we're scared of mental illness, right? Or what we think of, because I know for me, and that's be open and honest. And that's why I want to have this conversation to say, you know, I've been affected and I've talked about it on your episodes in my life, people in my life, and almost all my clients either struggles with mental illness or they have someone in their life, whether a kid, lover, friend, who struggles with mental illness. So no one is alone. Thank you again, Joseph, for coming on here. This was amazing. You did. Thank you for sharing your truth, being open and honest about your. That takes a lot of bravery and a lot of courage to do that. And for my listeners, if any of you are struggling, if you're struggling with mental health, anything, go and check out one of these organizations. You know, he listed. Reach out to someone. Reach out to myself, Joseph, someone on there, someone you love and trust, and say, hey, something's not okay. I don't feel okay in my mind, you know, and I promise you, you are not alone in that. Thank you again. I hope everyone has a beautiful day. Thank you. You're amazing up in New York. And please check me out on social media at the Hair Healer 1111. You know, Colleen Dixon on Facebook, the Weekly Awakening podcast on Facebook. And thank you everyone for your support and have a beautiful day.